This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The guy was sent back when he arrived at the airport in Libreville. Mm-hmm. It shows, for example, how authorities in Gabon has, you know, developed a kind of refusal strategy for every foreign reporters trying to enter the country.
And that was Sadibou Maronga, head of Reporters Without Borders Sub-Saharan Africa Bureau. On Cameroon, journalists not allowed to cover the recent Gabon presidential election. Details coming up. Also, allegations of crimes against humanity continue to surface from Western Darfur. And two men could become the first to face the death penalty under Uganda's new anti-homosexuality law. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. The African Union, the European Union, France, and several other countries expressed concern about the coup attempt in Gabon. Military leaders announced a mutiny today just after election officials declared President Ali Bongo Ondimba winner of Saturday's election. A military spokesman said Bongo is being kept under house arrest along with family and friends. He said Bongo's family and doctors were with him. The military has cancelled the results of the elections in which Bongo was seeking a third term. Bongo and before him, his father, have controlled the government since 1967. In Washington, John Kirby, the spokesman for the White House National Security Council, said the situation is particularly a concern because the region has suffered through several other coups in recent years.
It wouldn't surprise you at all to learn that we're following this very, very closely. This attempted military takeover, certainly the latest in a region that's been rocked by attempted coup d'etats and unconstitutional power grabs. And again, it's deeply concerning to us. We will remain a supporter of the people in the region, supporter of the people of Gabon, and on their demand for democratic governance, of course. But we're going to stay focused on continuing to work with our African partners and all the people on the continent to address the challenges and to support democracy. So. Again, we're watching this closely. It all kind of unfolded overnight, Jeff, so we don't have a whole lot of conclusions to draw right now.
Bongo himself issued a video statement today appealing for support.
I'm Ali Bongo Ondimba, president of Gabon, and I'm to send a message to all the friends that we have all over the world to tell them to make noise, for the people here have arrested me. And my family, my son is somewhere, my wife is in another place, and I'm at the residence. Right now, I'm at the residence, and nothing is happening. I don't know what's going on. So I'm calling you to make noise, really.
Bongo's family has been accused of getting rich on the country's resource wealth, while many of its citizens struggle to scrape by. The opposition in Saturday's election alleged there were massive irregularities in the voting to ensure Bongo won. In addition, the opposition has argued that changes to the election law made it impossible for them to win. The apparent military coup in Gabon is raising concern about the future of the countries in the Central African Economic Bloc, CEMAC, which has some of the world's longest-serving leaders. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from the Cameroonian capital Yaoundé.
Ce jour, 30 août 2023, nous...
Several dozen youths, a majority of them students from the University of Yaoundé, watch attentively as soldiers declare on Gabonese TV that the military, united in a transitional committee, is putting an end to the leadership of President Ali Bongo. The 64-year-old Bongo has ruled Gabon, an oil-producing nation, since succeeding his father, Omar Bongo, who died in 2009 after 42 years in power. Gabon held elections on August 26, with Ali Bongo running for re-election. But contested results indicate 69-year-old Albert Ondo Osa, a former minister and university professor, won the poll. Ondo said Ali Bongo wanted to steal his victory. Anong Jacob is a secondary school teacher in Yaoundé. He says post-election confusion in Gabon has given the military an opportunity to seize power, claiming that they want freedom for civilians, just like the militaries of Niger, Burkina Faso, and Mali.
It's a shared feeling with those in Niger who are thinking at the moment that the time is now or never. They have all the resources, gold, diamond, timber, and all of that, but we don't have any of the industries or factories that can process this material. All is transported to the West. We have little or nothing to benefit from it.
Gabon is a member of the Central African Economic and Monetary Community, CEMAC, an economic bloc that has some of the world's longest-serving leaders. 81-year-old President Teodora Obiang-Nguema of Equatorial Guinea won elections for a sixth term in 2022. Obiang came to power in a 1979 military coup and is the world's longest-serving head of state. In the Republic of Congo, 80-year-old Denis Sassou Nguesso has been president for all but five of the last 44 years. And in Cameroon, 90-year-old Paul Biya has been the president for 41 years since 1982. Central African Republic President Faustin Archange Touadéra hasn't been around as long, but recently extended the presidential term from 5 to 7 years and did away with the two-term limit for presidents. The CAR opposition says Touadéra created a life presidency for himself. Lange Nga-Derek, lecturer at the International Relations Institute of Cameroon, says these leaders' desire to hang on to power is causing systematic problems and widespread frustration.
Something has to be done, especially in French tropical Africa, ex-French colonies particularly, where egoistic interests frustrate most of the youth. You come out from the university, policies do not favor your integration into the system and help your nation, especially in some of these Francophone African countries.
Nga said if the opposition in French-speaking Central African countries remains fragmented and leaders keep their strong grip on power, the trend of militaries taking power, as happened in Gabon Wednesday, may spread even further. Moki Edwin Kinzeka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Gabon is the latest African country to undergo an attempted coup just weeks after a group of soldiers seized power in Niger. French media outlets France 24 and Radio France International were suspended from operating in Gabon at the end of last Saturday's election. A reporter from neighboring Cameroon was refused entry, according to Reporters Without Borders. Sadibou Marong, director of Reporters Without Borders Sub-Saharan Africa Bureau, tells VOA's Carol Van Dam that under normal conditions, foreign reporters are allowed to cover a presidential election.
What happened was they were heading to election on the 26th of August, and usually when elections come, all countries, namely in Africa, international media, they prepare themselves to send the reporters, to send people. I mean, that was the case for Vision Afrique, which is a kind of African media, but based in Paris, which is well read. It was also for RFI, which is a Radio France International, based in Paris. And Le Monde also, we spoke to their editors-in-chief, and they said, yes, they have exactly sent in accreditation form. But up to last week, that has been not replied to. And we also tried to verify how about African media. And we realized that in Cameroon, which is a neighboring country, their state-run media, which is Cameroon Tribune, prepared someone, one of a reporter, to send him there. And the guy was told by one before going that, yes, upon his arrival, he will get the accreditation. But that was not the case.
They reneged. They said they would allow him to cover the elections, and then they reneged on that.
They told him, come, upon his arrival, an accreditation would be given to him. But unfortunately for him, that was not the case. And the guy was sent back when he arrived at the airport in Libreville. Mm-hmm. It shows, for example, how authorities in Gabon has, you know, developed a kind of refusal strategy for every foreign reporters trying to enter the country. So this is a really, really, really anachronistic, measure, anachronistic decision to deprive foreign media of the possibility of covering such an important moment in a country's democratic right. life.
So as far as you know, was there any international election observers in Gabon?
No. As far as we know, there were no international observers in Gabon. During these elections were a kind of close-of-the-country election.
And we have learned that Gabon has resumed the broadcasts of several French media outlets, which were suspended in the wake of the post-election period that wrapped up with the ongoing coup. They include France 24, Radio France, and International TV 5 Monde. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Participants at the World Health Organization Africa Conference in Botswana say the continent must utilize technology to tackle health challenges. There are concerns African governments are still not allocating sufficient funds to health following commitments made in 2001. From Habrone, Botswana, reporter Mokandisi Dube has the details.
Botswana President Mokgweetsi Masisi led calls for the continent to take advantage of technology to ramp up production of critical drugs and medicines.
If you look at where we are with our production levels at 1% only of essential medicines and drugs produced in Africa, and what we need to do to catch up in order to have the capacity to deliver on your mandate, there's a lot of work you have to do.
WHO Regional Director for Africa, Matshidiso Moeti, says technology will enhance the continent's healthcare, particularly in the manufacture of pharmaceuticals.
We are devoting time and resources to better understanding the underlying determinants of health and disease across our region, and we've invested a lot in data systems in the past years. Let us take control of research and innovation across the region and decrease our dependency on the global north for pharmaceuticals.
South Africa-based Sean Broomhead leads a team of scientists across Africa who support the WHO on data-driven health solutions.
Data is a key aspect of determining our health. Dr. Tedros, the Director General of the WHO, said a couple of years ago that universal health coverage will not be achieved without digital health. So really enforcing this point, we've got to be thinking about data.
Despite efforts to embrace technology, concerns remain that African governments are not allocating sufficient funds to health. In 2001, African countries under the Abuja Declaration committed to allocating 15% of their national budget to health. But more than two decades later, less than a third of the continent's 54 nations have met that target. For VOA, this is Mqondisi Dube in Habroni, Botswana.
Allegations of crimes against humanity continue to surface from Western Darfur. In one refugee camp on Chad's border with Sudan, VOA spoke to widows who claim ethnic militias are targeting men for ethnic cleansing.
Hundreds of thousands have fled in recent weeks from Sudan's Darfur region to this refugee site in the Chadian border town of Adrey. Women and children are here in great numbers, but the relative absence of men is striking. Refugees and rights groups say men are being disproportionately targeted by ethnic Arab militias in Darfur that are alleged to be carrying out atrocities against civilians. One woman who lost her husband to the fighting 3 months ago told VOA she had to flee barefoot to Chad with her children after her home and everything in it was destroyed by the militias. Marwa Karmis Adam Ali says her children are very young and don't know that their father has been killed. She tells them that their father is going to return one day soon.
My children are very young and they don't know anything about what happened to their father. I reassure them that he's going to be returning soon.
The family has nowhere to go other than a tiny shelter. At this water collection point, in less than 5 minutes of speaking to various women, eight came forward to say they had been widowed by the fighting in recent weeks. Gamra Adam Jem now sells vegetables to make ends meet and says life without her husband is difficult. She says they killed her husband right in front of her. She was sitting next to him when the militia shot him in the head.
They killed my husband. We were sitting together and they just killed him, shooting him in the head.
Asked if Human Rights Watch has observed the targeting of men in Darfur, Mohamed Osman, a researcher who recently returned from Chad, said,
I mean, the trend speaks very clearly to the evidence we found, is how men were overwhelmingly being targeted. And part of it is because some of them were fighters, but also some of it is the perception of them being a fighting force. Even including in the trip that people, you know, when people fled, there has been targeting for men also on the road.
Asked what the government of Sudan is doing to protect civilians in Darfur, Gaddafi Abdallah Mohamed Ali, the Sudanese special counsel to the nearby Chadian town of Abache, called the Arab militias and paramilitary forces in Darfur a vast insurgency. He says the government of Sudan and its armed forces are carrying out their duty to defend Sudan, calling it a battle of dignity against the vast insurgency.
The government of Sudan and the Sudanese armed forces are carrying out their duty to repel and defend Sudan in this battle, which is a battle of dignity against this vast insurgency.
For the widows in Adre, the outlook is desperate with their families' breadwinners gone. But for some, things look set to get even more difficult. Kultham Adam Zakaria Bader says she managed to escape with her seven children and a group of other people who lived on her street.
We managed to escape along with other women and people from the street, but I have seven children.
She adds she is 6 months pregnant with her late husband's child. Henry Wilkins, VOA News, Adre, Chad.
Analysts say Abdulhamid Dabiba, the head of the Tripoli-based Government of National Unity, GNU, has come under scrutiny for his reported role in attempting to normalize Libya's relations with Israel, with some calling for his dismissal. Libya's rival parliament in the east, which rejects the GNU, said on Sunday it would hold hearings into the meeting between the Libyan foreign minister and her Israeli counterpart, while the Tripoli-based Presidency Council asked Dabiba for clarification, and the High State Council, another important body, condemned it. Wolfgang Porstei, former Austrian military attaché, discussed the reactions in Libya with VOA's Mohamed Al-Shenawi.
I would say there are three elements in this. The first one is the dire situation of the Palestinians is very closely followed in Libya. Next element is that there is a very strong anti-Israel sentiment in Libya. This must also be seen in context with Gaddafi's aspiration to become the leader of the Arabs in the fight against Israel. This was also a main reasoning for his nuclear weapons program. And finally, the situation of the population in Libya is also very dire for various reasons. Many don't see a real perspective for the future. They are fed up with corruption and the rule of the militias. And the meeting between Al-Mangush and Eli Cohen was for several the straw that broke the camel's back. The incident was subsequently exploited by the many opponents of Prime Minister Dabeba. And Dabeba is, of course, aware that this is much more than just an Al-Mangush scandal. And he knows that this is right now about the very survival of his own government.
Mangush has stated she refuses to be victimized by Prime Minister Dabeba's attempts to avoid embarrassment. And she claims that the meeting was approved in advance by the Prime Minister. One Libyan official told the Associated Press that the meeting was officially coordinated last month when Dabeba was on a visit to Italy, meeting his counterpart Giorgia Meloni. But Dabeba stressed that he rejects any normalization of relations with Israel and denied that he was aware of the intended meeting with the Israeli foreign minister. How could that contradiction impact the government of national unity in Libya?
I would say there are several good points in what Al-Mangush said, but for the time being, it seems to be that most, if Not all the Libyans believe that the Beba himself did not know about the meeting, although there are several other additional indications against him. In January, he had a meeting with CIA Director Burns in Tripoli, where this, such a rapprochement was a topic. Allegedly, later on, he met in Jordan the director of Israel's Mossad. The Beba denied this immediately. National Security Advisor Ibrahim the Beba allegedly also participated in Rome in the meeting with Eli Cohen. Information that the heads of the Internal Security Agency and of the General Intelligence Service were aware of the meeting well in advance. Furthermore, an official of the Israeli Ministry of Foreign Affairs stated that the meeting was arranged between Mangush and Cohen and on the highest levels. It was pre-planned by the prime ministers. This was not a by-chance encounter, according to them, as the Libyan foreign minister has portrayed it. The meeting had even lasted more than 2 hours. So if this is true, Al-Mangush might be very well right, and the meeting was really coordinated by the Beba. One thing is for sure, there is increasing pressure on the Beba to resign, and there were again protests in Tripoli, and there are protests right now in the capital and in other cities. The Beba's strategy is, for the time being, to sit it out.
According to Israeli Channel 12 TV, the U.S. was furious with Israel for revealing the meeting, as the White House expected the sit-down between Mangush and Cohen to remain secret and believes other countries will be deterred from exploring normalization after the popular reaction in Libya. If this proved to be true, how would that be perceived among Libyans?
Many Libyans will certainly be now even more suspicious about the American role in Libya and its aims. This will not do any good to the American reputation in Libya. Although I would say this must not be a surprise to Libya and the Libyans that the Americans are very supportive of Israel. This leaking, as you said, of crucial information will make any secret talks between Israel and its Arab neighbors and other Arab countries much more difficult. This is a very serious blow to the Arab-Israel reconciliation project, which was launched under President Trump. This leaves us all together with the question, who leaked the information? Who benefited from it? What was the aim? Was it the opposition in Israel to use this scandal for fierce attacks on the Netanyahu government? I doubt it. It would be rather unusual that the Israeli opposition harms Israel's national security. Is this about opponents of an expansion of the Abraham Accords, or is this about opponents of any Libyan contact with Israel and of the Dabeba government in Libya?
That was Wolfgang Porchtai, former Austrian military attaché, speaking with VOA's Mohammed Al-Shanawi. Senegal's justice minister says the conviction of opposition leader Ousmane Sonko in a moral corruption scandal is final, leaving him ineligible for the 2024 presidential election. Sonko, a vocal critic of President Macky Sall, has faced a string of legal woes since 2021, which he says are aimed at keeping him out of politics. He was found guilty on June 1st of morally corrupting a young woman and sentenced in absentia for 2 years in prison, sparking clashes that left at least 16 dead. In July, he was arrested on separate charges, including fomenting insurrection, criminal association in connection with a terrorist enterprise, and undermining state security over incidents dating back to 2021. According to the French news agency AFP, Sonko's lawyers argue that his arrest on the new allegations cancelled out his conviction in this moral corruption case because he had been tried in absentia. The government says the conviction is legal. Authorities have dissolved his political party and arrested hundreds of his supporters and party members, prompting criticism from human rights defenders. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehayas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbil Yabaro, and our engineer, Jumbe Hamza, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.